mediaweek.com.au. This is Media Week's TV industry podcast, recorded at MCM Studios.
Okay, welcome to another Media Week podcast. We have got Tony Martin on the phone. He is one of the co-hosts of Joy of Sets, I should get it right. And his other co-host, Ed Cavalier, technically couldn't be part of this this union on this Media Week podcast, but we will have him in about 10 to 15 minutes' time. And Tony, I should introduce you by saying that I've got James Manning on the phone as well from Media Week. Did I see you in a GIO advert?
I think that is me. That's an animated plasticine version of me.
Yeah, that's it.
Takes so long to do, one frame at a time. I find it exhausting.
Well, this preview disc is out and about now of Joy of Sets, and that is one of the opening gags, without wanting to give too much away about who you are and where you have appeared before this new TV show.
Well, I'm so many lookalikes for me, really. It was Where's Wally for 19 years, and then, of course, the Computers for Dummy cartoon nerd came along, and that's who I'm generally mistaken for now in the world of cartoons. Obviously, the GIO one, he's plasticine, but I think it is based on me.
Tony, tell us a little bit about the show. You've got a 9 o'clock Tuesday slot on Channel 9. A comedy about television. Tell us a bit what we can expect to see.
Well, it's an idea. It's actually an idea of Andrew Denton and his company, and they'd been sort of tooling about with it for, I think, 3 or 4 years. And he got me up to Sydney about a year ago and described the idea to me and had a list of people who he thought I could host it with. And I looked at the list and I went, well, these are all good people, but, you know, it's never going to be quite as good as if it's me and Ed Cavalier, because that's pretty much what we did on our radio show and pretty much what we do in real life, which is just talk endlessly about TV. So it was a pretty kind of easy fit. It's not like when someone calls up and says, we want you to do a show about, you know, mountaineering, you have to learn all about it. It's pretty much, you know, talking about the opening titles of Baywatch and Man About the House is kind of what we do in real life anyway.
Right, okay. So that's what we can expect. Will you dissect a different area of television each episode?
Yeah, it's very sort of specific. I mean, the first episode is all just what you need for your opening titles. We've literally confined it to just opening title sequences and managed to somehow get a whole half hour out of that.
But what about the way Dean Martin started his show with all the dancing girls and the pole that he decided to come, you know, jumping
down? I love that. I mean, Dean Martin, in adjusted terms, Dean Martin is still the highest paid man in the history of television. And I remember when I was a kid, one of my teachers at school announcing to the class that Dean Martin had been paid $34 million to do 3 more years of the Dean Martin show. And, you know, you can imagine how ridiculous that would seem to a primary school teacher. And I remember looking that figure up recently. It's in Nick Tosius's book Dino, and it's actually correct. He was $34 million in like 1967, and so he is literally the highest paid man in television ever. And you go, right, how did he begin his show? And it's 20 seconds of go-go dancers singing a song about how great Dean is, and then you just cut to him with a cigarette in his mouth and I think a tumbler of whiskey in his hand coming down a fireman's pole. It's the greatest opening to a show ever.
How did you manage to secure Warwick Capper for the first episode?
Well, you've got to deal with his many managers. He has a number of managers. And they won't. You can't talk to them until they've received what they call the cabbage.
Oh, no.
and then Warwick was bundled onto a plane and we spent 2 days filming all over Melbourne with Warwick. And in one sketch, we wanted him in his trademark gold hot pants that he wore. I think he wore those when he was a Gold Coast meter man for a while.
Yes.
And then we just decided, damn it, let's just have him in those in everything. So even in the opening titles of The Sullivans, he's wearing gold hot pants. And, he's not... he didn't require much convincing to get into them, I will say.
Did you sort of come to any conclusions about opening credits? I mean, tell us a little bit about your show's opening credits. And I guess watching some programs, you can almost, they go for too long and you sort of can lose the vibe these days. You're tempted to get the remote control and see if you could flick a few channels while the credits are still going.
Well, that's right. Well, with our one, they have, gone with the animated versions of myself and Ed, me looking very Computers for Dummies man, and Ed, for some reason, has an enormous neck. He's storing chestnuts for the winter inside that neck. And then we decided to have a look at all at what would possibly have made for a better opening titles. And we look at, like you say, the titles when I was a kid. We dug out the ones from Grizzly Adams. And we actually had a running joke throughout the first episode, which we had to cut out for running time reasons, which was just us cutting back to that title, Still in Progress, because it went for, I think, 2.5 to 3 minutes, told the entire story of the show, and then had a song. And that was, those were how long they used to be, whereas we contrast that with the opening of 24 or Lost that are open in about 5 seconds. The idea was that we would see how many tricks we could learn, and then at the end of the first episode, we redo our opening titles using all of those ideas.
Right. What's the sort of, is YouTube a big asset these days in tracking a lot of these old programs?
I don't think you could do the show that we're doing without YouTube. And we've been looking at, even before we started writing, we spent 6 weeks just looking at things on YouTube and whittling it down. And I think I now have seen all of YouTube. I think I've seen everything that's on there. But, it's hard to imagine how you would have done... You could have done this show, but it would just take so long to canvas everything, because it's like YouTube is like part of your brain. You just go, hang on, what was that thing where... Remember Man... I sit there and I go, Man About the House. There was... I always remember there was the woman, the blonde woman in that show, Sally Tomset. When her face came up, in fact, it wasn't her face, it was her ass, and they supered her name over her own ass. And I remember thinking, did I just dream that, or did that really happen? And, of course, it only happened in one series of Man About the House. And luckily, because YouTube is so completist, all the different titles from that show were on there, and we were able to find that one. I mean, that probably would have taken months if you'd had to send away for copies of the show.
Can you tell us, to people out there thinking about compiling their own sort of bootleg compilation TV shows, is there sort of a trick with the amount of content you can use before you have to get it cleared?
Well, we have the old review and criticism laws in this country, which means that if you are offering genuine sort of qualitative judgment, you can use some footage. And so there's a kind of, this show is a bit of a tug of war between comedy and genuine review and criticism, because even though we're just trying to get to as many jokes as we can, there is an element of sort of showing how these things work. But at the same time, I mean, I keep doing interviews where they go, oh, is this like the Gruen transfer? And I go, well, not really, because this is a much sillier show than the Gruen transfer, for starters. But also, I mean, I don't watch the Gruen transfer, but people I know who do seem to think that they're learning things they would never have heard of before. Like, it's like the tradition, what is it, that show where the masked magician reveals how the magic tricks are done? Whereas I don't think you can really do that with television. Everyone knows all the tricks of television. Every 13-year-old has a blog with the top 5 cliches on Law and Order. So it's much harder, even though we're trying to show some of the tricks that are used, we don't really act as though we're teaching people anything they don't know. We're saying, look, we all know this cliche, and now here's something funny we're going to do with it. So it's slightly different from, there is a certain amount of what you can do under review and criticism laws, and the shows are subjected to quite rigorous scrutiny by lawyers. Ed and I, because we're the only writers on the show, we started months ago, and we wrote about an hour's worth of material for each show. And, immediately about a third of that was eliminated, because it had been, no, you're just using that footage to get to a cheap joke. There's no there's no kind of aspect of analysis to it. And the ones that survived that process are the ones that ended up in the episode.
And just speaking about writing these episodes a couple of months ago, obviously you wrote in the fireplace, which is part of the set, but we're starting to go into the spring and summer months and people are starting to turn off their fireplaces.
Well, it isn't a real fireplace, so maybe we'll switch it over. Because we had no idea when it would go to air. So, I mean, I've been doing publicity interviews for this show, and I'm saying, look, I'm actually not sure when it's going out. We only found out the other day.
Oh, that's good. Just speaking of how you guys are going at the moment, I know when we were coordinating this interview, you had to hang up and phone your assistant at your office. Now, how big is this office? Have you turned into John Laws?
No, it's a really small... It's like a crack team doing this show. I mean, Ed did TV Burp a few years ago, and he had 13 writers on that show. I don't think we have 13 people working on this show total. We have two researchers, and we have me and Ed, and we have Angus Fitzsimons, who's kind of our head writer, but his job is really trying to take me and Ed's bits and join them together, because we like to, Ed and I like to not know exactly what the other one's working on, so that when we record the show, even right through all the rehearsals, I don't look at Ed's clips and he doesn't look at mine. And when we have to do our jokes in the rehearsal, we just go blah, blah, blah. We just say literally blah, 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 so that the cameras can practice, because we don't want to hear what the other one's going to say till the record. It's a very odd process, but it's something that I remember learning on radio, which is when I used to do Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy, we were very big on not knowing exactly what the other one was going to say, because you don't want that fake laughter. Sure. You know, that ho, ho, ho.
That breakfast radio laugh.
Yeah, we never wanted that. And you can only do a real laugh once, you know, so you want the bit where you hear the joke to be the bit that's filmed.
Now, last time we saw you on TV, I think you were sort of a quiet word with sort of late night Saturdays on the ABC, I think it was. Now you're in early prime time, bracketed with 2.5 men, a bit of a change?
Well, it is. I mean, I had to wear like a proper suit on that show and act like an adult. And of course, that show was more about me trying to introduce people to people I love in comedy, and a lot of them were people that maybe no one's heard of, like Rob Brydon, which was one of the most popular episodes, but I think 9 out of 10 people I spoke to had never even heard of Rob Brydon until they saw that show. But this one is more about me getting to wear some silly wigs and reenact the opening titles of the Brady Bunch.
How much of your life is spent sort of in retro TV yet? And what do you like with sort of contemporary television? Do you watch a bit of both? Or?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I actually hardly watch any live TV at all. I just have piles of DVDs, and I'm watching Justified at the moment and Louie, things like that. Just watching that show, Eastbound and Down. Do you know that one? With Kenny Powers.
Oh, yes.
Friday Night Lights. These are some of the shows I've got on the pile at the moment. So I just tend to watch series on DVD, and I watch a massive amount of them. And I find, I don't know how you guys feel, but to me it's like TV is the new movies. These are like, I go to a movie and I go, well, is it better than 2 episodes of Breaking Bad, really? It's like, I feel like we're living through a golden era of television. But because this show is about all kinds of television, Ed and I have been forced to watch things like cooking and renovation shows, which we've never seen a single frame of. So what's fun about that is that, you know, we're not positioning ourselves necessarily as experts. We're certainly positioning ourselves as nerds. But when we've done an episode on cooking shows, and on Friday night we shot one on renovation shows, but of everyone in the room, we were probably the two guys who had seen the least of those. So I think there's a bit of fun in getting our first-hand reactions to those kind of formats.
What about Hole in the Wall?
Hole in the Wall? Well, Angus Fitzsimons, who I mentioned earlier, who's working on the show, he was one of the writers on Hole in the Wall. I'm going, why does it need writers? Isn't it just people throwing themselves at shapes? What kind of writing is there on that show?
What else are you up to these days? I mean, you've got to focus on this. Is it 8 episodes? What's the order for the first run?
It's 8 episodes, and we've shot 4 of them already. We haven't actually written the last one, so there's a bit of a race against time at the moment. But, normally, I mean, it's not something I would have, you know, I'm not someone who goes, oh, I have to be on Channel 9 in prime time. I would never have thought to do a show like this unless Andrew had suggested it to me. I was pretty much happy kind of doing directing, which is what I've been doing mostly for the last year. I worked on Librarians, the last series of The Librarians, and then Judith Lucy's show.
Right.
And it was, and I probably would have just continued down that path if Andrew hadn't called me up.
Are you sort of done with radio for the time being?
I love radio, and I get to do, I just tend to do it in bursts because the kind of radio that I do is really intensive. It's sort of, you have to, it's real 24-hour a day radio. There's a lot of writing, and I've always done shows where the emphasis is on comedy, and so there is a lot of sketches and a lot of listening to, you know, music and trying to get it all right. So it's quite an exhausting style. So I tend to just do one every few years when I can. It's like, I call it going to war. You have to really suit up for it and turn your entire life over to it. Mostly I've just been working for Gristmill, which is Wayne Hope and Robin Butler's company. I've written a few pilots with them, and they've got some other stuff coming up that I might work on. But I do a lot of radio. Actually, these days, most of my radio is on Triple R in Melbourne with Tony Wilson, and I do a show called The Two Tones on Triple R, and I've been doing that for the last 3 or 4 years on and off. We're like the floaters. I think we've done every single shift except breakfast now on that show, on that station.
Okay. How do you think the show much different to, I guess TV Burp was more a sort of review of what was on currently, is that?
Well, TV Burp was a format from England which is hosted by Harry Hill, who's quite a surreal comedian, and Ed was sort of in, it was a franchise version of it. I mean, they bought the rights to it and used the same set and everything, and it was much more sort of, as Ed said, it was just random jokes, you know, very quick 3-second clips followed by a joke, and nothing, it wasn't like there was any theme to each episode, whereas this is like we're just taking one thing and trying to pull it apart and get to as many jokes as possible along the way. We're also doing a lot of sketches, which I don't think Ed did any sketches on TV Burp.
Sure. Okay.
And it's also about, you know, the interaction between the two of us as well.
Yeah. Tell me, do you find it as fulfilling when you're working as a director or perhaps writing for someone else as opposed to, you know, doing the acting or the radio?
Well, I don't think I've ever written stuff for anybody else except maybe, you know, a couple of scripts, film scripts. But the directing side is fantastic. It depends who you're working with. I mean, I just love working with Wayne and Robin. I don't know if you know much about their company, but it's run out of a shed in their backyard, and they made three series of Librarians. They did a show called Very Small Business, a show called Stories from the Gulf. They've got a movie on the way, and they're just such great people to work with because they're producers, but they've done everything themselves. Wayne directs. Obviously, they're both great actors. They've written stuff, and, you know, I'd be quite happy working with Wayne and Robin until the end of time.
Sure.
So that's, and they're very, you know, with Librarians, even though it's their show, they let me have final cut on the episodes, and I got to go all the way through. And I, you know, it's, having not done a lot of directing for TV, I didn't realize how rare that is, that on a lot of dramas, you know, the directors just direct the scenes and then the footage is edited by the producers.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. What's it been like working with Andrew and the people at Zapruders?
It's great. He's a real magnet for great people, like Rachel Miller is our producer, and she's fantastic. She did Adam Hill's show. We have a head researcher called Brett Bowman, who, I mean, I think he should be considered one of the writers on the show because he's not just finding footage. He knows that he kind of can predict the kind of jokes that we'll be doing or the kind of things we'll be looking for. So, Andrew just seems to be, he just seems to be able to draw in all these great people. And, of course, he's much more, Andrew is much more big picture. I mean, it's funny because I'm constantly mistaken for Andrew Denton. Pretty much every time I go into an airport, I was flying to Sydney last week and there was a family in the queue ahead of me at the x-rays, and the guy just turns around and just comes up and his first words were, "Who are you?" And I just went, okay, I know who he thinks he is, so I'll just say it. I just went, "I'm Andrew Denton." And he turned to his family and went, "See, told you." And this just happens all the time. But we're quite, I mean, Andrew's very much interested in the big picture and in why television is the way it is and what it says about things. And of course, Ed and I are just interested in as many silly jokes as we can get to. So it's kind of a car crash between his very organised thinking and our love of tangents and irrelevant aside. So I think it's a really been a good combination.
Sure.
He's created a really solid structure for us to piss fart around within.
Okay, now, Tony, we're going to interview Ed in a moment. Is there one question, an opening question we should ask of him going into it?
How many meals does he have a day?
Okay, right.
Because it seems to me like he's still eating lunch when dinner arrives.
Yeah, right.
He has something like, I think he has eight meals. I think I counted eight last time.
Yeah. That's right.
He's obsessed with food.
Okay,
no, well, he's in good shape, so I guess he's got to feed that body, huh?
He does. He's the most hulking nerd I know.
Okay, Tony, well, good luck with the TV show. It's been great to hear from you. I know we'd love to spend more time with you, and maybe we might do that down the track because we've been banging out these podcasts for almost 3 years, and one of the guys we want to talk to is you. So we appreciate you giving us 20 minutes today, mate.
All right, thank you. Cheers.
And we have Ed on the other line here. Ed, how many meals a day do you eat?
Well, I just had a smoothie. Does that count as a meal?
Absolutely.
At the moment, six-ish, I guess, you'd say.
I heard about almost eight a day. That's what Tony was saying earlier.
Yeah, it depends if I'm like, you know, if I'm really sort of, if we're doing stuff like on filming days and all that sort of stuff. When they get nervous, some people smoke and drink. I just sort of eat sandwiches, you know? That's just my thing. I know, it's a bit much. During Cup Fever, when I was doing that last year, I got into this habit of having like 2.5 dinners, and I put on just eight kilos of just all fat in about 26 days. So I thought, all right, I got to be careful, you know?
Now, Ed, we've been talking Joyous Sets with Tony. Now it's your turn. Now, is it three networks in 3 years for you? You've had a series on Seven. You did Cup Fever for SBS last year. Is this your first hit out with Nine?
Yeah, actually, I never thought of it like that. I guess it is. That's pretty. Great. Well, yeah, I guess it is. Now that I think about it, I haven't been on Gem yet. That's the one I'm really holding out for, you know?
Oh, well, we'll refrain from making jokes about that's where the show could end up, but I'm sure it'll
be well. No, you never know. You know, we might. What happens then, on Gem at the moment? It's what are they got the McLeod? They got a bit of McLeod. We could always go up with McLeod. A bit of a double header. That'd be good.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the shows on those digital channels, is there? And they're often quite more watchable, I guess, than the stuff on the primary channel.
Well, what's been great about the digital channels is all of a sudden you're getting people saying, have you heard about Eastbound and Down? And New Family Guy on Seven, mate. And I think In Between Us was on Go. And these are really good shows that, you know, probably wouldn't get much of a run. But now they're on free-to-air, you know?
Yep, and doing good business too.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love that side of it. Because there's now, you know, there's just more options, you know?
Yep. Now, mate, do you have different duties to Tony on the program, or do you just sit there and is it a sort of a joke fest to see who does best?
I think it's more, you know what Tone's like? When we first started, he's like, you know, Tone's so, you know, he's like, oh, you know, we'll write the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, cool. And on the radio, that meant that he wrote 90% of it, and I just sort of sat there and, you know, chimed in whenever I felt like it. So right. I thought this time around I should actually try and pull my weight a bit more. So, you know, that's what's been... We had a bunch of couple of months to get writing, and that's what's, you know, like that's... So now we're at the point where we've got a few shows left to record, but we're actually, you know, he and I sort of bringing back stuff from older episodes that couldn't fit in, and trying to make it, you know, fit the theme for that week's show. So we've got one where the theme is things going wrong, like that's the broad theme of it, but not bloopers. I think that's been covered. You know, I think bloopers might have been covered by 1,000 different shows over the years. So that's just been an excuse for Tony and I to try and crowbar all sorts of just whatever we've had left over from the other episodes, you know?
Yes, yeah. Do you sort of specialise in an area of TV that Tony's maybe not so strong on, or vice versa?
Yeah, he doesn't watch, like, he's not big on Foxtel because he doesn't have it.
Okay.
So, you know, like lifestyle kind of shows, like in like you know, things like My Monkey Baby, and the Kardashians and stuff like that. He's not really his. I haven't really come across his desk. So those things are
like the Housewives of the Real OC and or the Real Housewives of the OC. That's disappointing. He's missing out on some great TV.
I know he's missing out on. I had this bit which we actually had to cut where there was the Real Housewives of which one was it? Orange County.
Yeah, Orange County would have been.
Orange County. That was.
Or was it the Hills?
No. It was the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah. And I was watching it, and there was this hilarious bit where they all went to dinner with the girl, the woman who inspired the show Medium, Frances, whatever her name was, Dubois, like the actual person. And they sat down at this dinner table, and she sits there and then just starts ripping into these people for saying that their husbands don't love them and da-da-da-da-da. And it was just the most outrageously set up. So they've obviously set it up. But then the setup's gone wrong. So you actually ended up with that rarest of things, some actual reality in a reality television program, you know, where they were really genuinely hating each other, really upset. But we just couldn't find a way to fit it in. But that, to me, is like, I mean, that concept of that as a TV show of just rich, sort of bored housewives fighting with each other, like, I reckon if 10 years ago you pitched that to a television station, they just would have stared at you and said, but what do they do?
We've already got Bold and the Beautiful.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. Like now it's like, why the hell were we paying scriptwriters all these years when all we had to do was basically have what do they call them? Story producers. And get them to stand in front of a camera and say, well, can you say you hate Cheryl? Oh, I hate Cheryl. Great, thanks very much. See you next week. You know?
That's the interesting thing with some of that constructed reality shows. You often get some really gold when it sort of goes beyond the script, doesn't it?
Oh, no, the best one for me was Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which I just... That show, just drives me crazy, that show. And it's one of my girlfriend's favourites. Every time I walk upstairs, I can just hear a brainless Kardashian complaining about a photo shoot. And I wandered upstairs the other day, and we actually ended up using it for one of the episodes where they set up this thing where, as a charity event, they asked people if in the community whether or not they'd like to... Sorry, tram going past. Whether or not they'd like to box a Kardashian. And the idea was that they'd just get people who, you know, fans of the show, but they didn't. They got people that hated them. So these people jumped into the ring and were really, really trying to bash the Kardashians' heads in. It was very funny.
Yeah, that show has spawned so many offshoots. It's a full-time job keeping up with it and its sister shows, I think.
Oh, my goodness. And there's always another one. It's like you kill one and there'll be two more because every time you turn around, there's a twin or another daughter or a boyfriend or something. It's amazing. It's amazing, you know?
Yes, you'd be pretty happy about the 9 o'clock... Tuesday time slot, wouldn't you? Some pretty strong programs wrapped around you.
Yeah, I'm. Thanks very much, Channel 9. You know, I'm wrapped because, you know, what you want is you want to be around a comedy show, if you can, because you know have the right sort of vibe. And you know, the 2.5 Men was pretty popular. So hopefully people will stick around, have a look at Ashton to see how it goes, and then stick around and watch us. You know.
You know, it's fantastic stuff, and I'd like to see you guys at the Logies next year, that's for sure.
Can you imagine? Tony says he's never been, which is kind of strange. Yeah, I was like, the leggy Rhonda Birchmore's been every year for the last 25 years, but Tony's never been.
James, we have about 60 seconds of satellite time remaining before somebody else has to get into this studio.
Fair enough.
Okay. One last question, James.
Yeah, look, we're all looking forward to this. I think it's going to be good viewing. You love your sport, Ed. Are we going to get to see a sport episode?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make Tony sit sport. That is the one thing where he was just like, now listen up front, nothing. Sports just not. So I was like, you know what? I can talk sport with Santo and Sam, and I can talk just nerdy TV with you. And cows to the cows come home. I will leave you with this though. So my favourite thing that's happened so far, and I don't know if Tony brought it up, is we were talking about Pack to the Rafters, and Tony had to watch 3 DVDs of Pack to the Rafters. He'd never seen it before in his life. And I called him up after he watched the 3rd DVD, and he was really, like, sort of frazzled by it. And I said, how did you find it? And he goes, to me, watching Pack to the Rafters is like watching 45 margarine commercials tacked onto each other.
Thank you very much for that. That's great.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Ed.
See you, mate.
Okay, bye-bye.
See you.
There we go, James. That was Ed and Tony from The Joy of Sets.
Yeah, a bit unusual getting them both at separate times there, but I think it conveyed some of the excitement of the show. We'll be watching at the 9 o'clock Tuesday night, Channel 9, from September 20.
And good luck to the guys with that show as well. It's a half-hour show and looks like a pretty entertaining half an hour.
Yeah, no, it should be fun. People like watching stuff about TV and having a laugh about it, so fingers crossed it does well for them.
Media Week Podcast is where you can find these podcasts and also at mediaweek.com.au. And we're on Twitter as well at MediaWeekAUS. Thank you, James.
See you, mate.
MediaWeek.com.au.